stormy weather. That's what we've got on tap for you here at the Rusted Culture Show. And I want to welcome you back. This is episode 50. And we've got an interesting show lined up for you for today. And yes, that includes some stormy weather for President Trump. And kicking it off here, the thing that was kind of stormy that sort of kicked off the whole storm front here, if you will, is that Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen is President Trump's attorney, he had arranged for a former adult film star, Stephanie Clifford, whose stage name is Stormy Daniels, to be paid $130,000. Lordy, lordy. $130,000, and he arranged that back in October of 2016, according to the Wall Street Journal, to keep her from publicly discussing an alleged encounter with Mr. Trump. And Ms. Clifford says that she met Trump at a celebrity golf tournament in July of 2006, and the alleged encounter took place soon after that. And Ms. Clifford was reportedly discussing a possible appearance on Good Morning America in the fall of 2016, just before the election. So it kind of adds a little context to the fact that after the agreement was reached with Michael Cohen, Ms. Clifford's camp complained that the payment wasn't being made quickly enough, and she threatened to cancel the deal, some of the people that are familiar with the matter said. And you can imagine that if they had drugged their feet and not paid her and had her kind of stall till after the election, there wouldn't probably have not have been a reason to even pay her after the election. So she was complaining that the payment wasn't being made quickly enough. The payment was eventually made to Ms. Clifford through her lawyer in the matter, who is Keith Davidson, and the funds were sent to Mr. Davidson's client trust account at City National Bank in Los Angeles. And he does agree that I previously represented Miss Daniels, Mr. Davidson said, referring to Miss Clifford's stage name, but attorney-client privilege prohibits me from commenting on my client's legal matters. Interesting how all this works out, and although I haven't really confirmed it or read too much about it, evidently the National Enquirer is rumored to have quashed a story along the same lines, not with Miss Clifford, but with someone else. And they paid evidently $150,000. And again, I haven't read into that, but that's another story. The National Enquirer, of course, is friends with Donald Trump. So, interesting. Interesting stuff here. Well, we've got a new ambassador to the Netherlands, and his name is Peter Hoekstra. And the good news is, we have one less nut job in the U.S., folks. Isn't that good news? The bad news here is that the Netherlands got him. Yes, too bad for the Netherlands. They have a new ambassador named Peter Hoekstra. And folks, it's bad enough that we have to combat the daily chaos of this president. It's almost daily, really. But as with any disease, it spreads, doesn't it? It tends to spread. And in this case, we have an ambassador, an appointee by Trump, to the Netherlands, who really by all rights should not even be in public office, let alone an ambassador role to the Netherlands. But this is how Trump spreads his contagion of backwardation. That's how it's done. And I'm talking again about Pete Hoekstra, the new U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands. And according to the Baltimore Sun, who wrote an article on January 11th of 2018, just last week, and I quote that article, it says, "It all started slightly more than 2 years ago, when a former Michigan congressman, Peter Hoekstra, told a group of conservatives that the Netherlands had no-go zones. No-go zones outside the rule of law where politicians and cars were being set on fire by radical Islamists." That wasn't true, of course, but when he was later called out on the issue by Dutch media, he called it fake news. And then, almost immediately after saying it was fake news, he denied calling it fake news. Folks, it was only later, it was only evident to him when he was later shown a clip of this no-go statement, as well as a clip of his claim that it was fake news, that he admitted, rather embarrassingly, that he had said it. So what sort of, unearthly trend is this to say something and then deny that you even said it? We've seen this again this week with President Trump, and we're going to get into a little bit of that later in the podcast. I always say, nobody said it had to make sense. It's nice when it does. But what a nut job here, folks. And there's another article on this guy by CNN, and I've got a link out there in my show notes that you can click on and see the article. And according to CNN, he also promoted conspiracy theories, asserting longtime Hillary Clinton aide Huma Abedin had connections to the Muslim Brotherhood, and said he considered the possibility that then-President Barack Obama was allowing radical Islam to proliferate on purpose. And again, in the show notes link, you can hear Hoekstra in all of his demented glory, but please feel free to give Ambassador Hoekstra hell every chance you get over there. Hold him to what he says. Hold him to the truth of what he says. And feel free to kick him out if you can't stand him anymore. Just feel free. We won't hold it against you at all. Well, we've got another story here. This is about Trump's celebrated pastor, Paula White. And she would like you to show her the money. Evidently, baby needs a new pair of shoes. And this is reported to us by the Huffington Post. And again, there's a link in my show notes that you can see. And we're just on a nut job parade here, folks. And we're going to keep the Trump nut job cakewalk moving on with Pastor Paula White. And if you haven't heard of her before now, just hang in there. Evidently, Pastor Paula White, she's a prosperity gospel preacher with close ties to President Donald Trump, and she's calling on followers to send her donations of up to 1 month's salary. Those who don't pay could face consequences from God as he demands the dough as a first fruits offering. The reason is God lays claim to all first. Pastor White wrote on her website, "So when you keep for yourself something that belongs to God, you are desecrating what is to be consecrated to God." In this case, the first are money, which supernaturally unlocks amazing opportunities, she says, blessing, favor, and divine order for your life. That money unlocks all of that good stuff if you only go through her when you give it. You know, it further says here that White, who is surprisingly chairwoman of Trump's Evangelical Advisory Committee, if you can believe that, she claims that she contributes a month's pay every year as a seed, which according to Prosperity Gospel is supposed to grow into riches and other blessings. She's also calling on others to contribute their own first in the form of wages for a day or for a week or for an entire month. And here's a quote from her, folks. "When you honor this principle, it provides the foundation and structure for God's blessings and promises in your life. It unlocks deep dimensions of spiritual truths that literally transform your life. When you apply this, everything comes into divine alignment for His plan and promises for you. When you don't honor it, whether through ignorance or direct disobedience, there are consequences." You know, folks, I went to a Christian school for 12 years, and I've never heard anything like this. You gave willingly and freely because you wanted to, and to whomever you wanted to. And there was never any sort of implication that you would be in direct disobedience or there would be consequences. And that's why I respect the religious people that I've come to know. In my experience through the 12 years that I went to a Christian school. And I have a lot of respect for those people, and I have no respect for Pastor Paula White, who I think taints the good work that is being done out there. And if you want to give, folks, give to something like the Salvation Army here in America that's doing a great job with very little expense overhead. Give to something like that. Well, we're going to move on here. We've got Senator Grassley is taking heat from his constituents here in Iowa. And I've got an article out there to the Des Moines Register's link to this article. And what Grassley typically does every year is he goes around to each one of the 99 counties in Iowa, and he holds what he calls a town hall. And this time he's in Logan, Iowa, and it's a town of about 1,500 people. and everybody kind of gathers around and asks questions. And one of the folks there stood up and asked him this: Are you not personally concerned about his fitness to serve? Talking about Trump. If not, why not? Because I'm very concerned. Mary Mickles, a retired 67-year-old from nearby Portsmouth, asked Grassley. Grassley deflected that question, saying he wasn't qualified to make a psychiatric assessment, but Mickles persisted. He gets on Twitter and says the last thing that Fox News told him to say, she said. That's not presidential. It's concerning. Are you personally concerned? To which Grassley said, I have a job to do. I'm not President of the United States. I'm a check on the President of the United States. That's my constitutional responsibility. I'm going to do what I can under our Constitution to make sure that nothing bad happens to our country. You know, they just can't say and denounce something that he said. He's clearly saying it's not his job. Sad. Well, the event, which is Grassley's first public town meeting on his annual tour of all 99 Iowa counties, drew about 50 people to the community center in this little town of about 1,500. And the article kind of makes a good mention here of the fact that, in contrast to the crowds that packed into lawmakers' town meetings last year, the anti-Trump contingent was not obviously organized at this meeting. There were no young clipboard-carrying organizers from political groups, and none of the attendees carried those red and green agree-disagree signs that were made famous by the liberal indivisible movement. They appeared, by and large, to be from Logan and the small communities immediately surrounding. So that's an interesting trend that we're seeing here, folks. These aren't people that are organized this area that... You know, they're coming from, I believe that Republicans outnumber Democrats 2-1. So I think we're going to see a blue wave, and this is how goes Iowa. I think the rest of the country shall follow. This is an interesting little dynamic that we're seeing here in a very Republican community, and folks are speaking their mind, and they're not happy about what they're seeing in government today. In that meeting, Grassley responded to comments that were made by Trump on Thursday, in which he questioned why the United States allows immigration from shithole countries. And he was, of course, referring to Haiti, El Salvador, and most of Africa. And to that, Grassley said, I think it detracts from the very important issue we've got to get solved by March 5th, Grassley said, referencing the deadline for DACA. And he said, I think generally speaking, that you're better to keep to the issues. Don't do anything to detract from the issues, and bottom line, all people ought to be treated with respect. Well, that's true, but you need to face what your president is saying, and you need to denounce on a moral and ethical basis what needs to be denounced, and that clearly isn't happening with a lot of Republicans, is it? And folks, there's an interesting thing here. How would you like to see what's happening real time with the Russian trolls that spread fake news and disinformation? How would you like a window into what they're up to real time? Well, I've got a show link out there to something called Hamilton 68 Dashboard. And it's a rather interesting website where you can see exactly what's going on with these Russian trolls. And this website says that between December 9th and December 31st, they examined 182 unique articles that were among the top URLs that were shared by Kremlin-oriented accounts on Twitter. And 29 of those articles attempted to discredit the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Mueller investigation, or some other element of the so-called deep state. Sexual misconduct was the primary theme in 10% of the examined articles. All of those articles either attacked accused Democrats or they attempted to discredit the accusers of Roy Moore or President Trump. So get out there, check it out, and you can see exactly what these Russian trolls are doing as we speak. Interesting stuff. Well, there's an interesting article that just came out today from the Washington Post, and again, I've got a link on my show notes to it. It's they want you to meet the 24-year-old that's now running Trump's drug policy office. This was the office that we've often heard called the drug czar, you know, where he worked. It was the pinnacle of the government's effort to stamp out drugs. Well, we've got a 24-year-old person that's evidently running this right now. And it's an article that's out today that shows the fragility of our government and how Trump is not taking this business of running our country seriously, in my opinion. It also shows how Trump really just gives lip service to the opioid epidemic, but in reality, he's letting one of its primary government organizations that are that's designed to fight the epidemic fall into disrepair. This is a warning sign that this administration is letting our country disintegrate and slip through our very fingers under the lip service of Make America Great Again. Folks, talk is cheap. We know it's cheap. The reality of what that cheap talk does to America isn't cheap. And this article talks about a recent college graduate and campaign volunteer. His name is Taylor Wyneth and is now an administrative leader in Trump's drug policy office. And going back in May of 2016, Taylor Wyneth was an undergraduate at St. John's University, New York, a legal studies student and fraternity member who organized a golf tournament and other events to raise money for veterans and their families. And less than a year later, at 23 years old, Wyneth, according to the article, was a political appointee and rising star of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the White House office that's responsible for coordinating the federal government's multi-billion dollar anti-drug initiatives in supporting President Trump's effort to curb the opioid epidemic. And as the article implies here, Wyneth would soon become the deputy chief of staff. And it goes into his brief autobiography here, or his biography, that shows a few clues that he would be so quickly assume a leading role in the Drug Policy Office, a job that was recently occupied by a lawyer and veteran government official. And Wyneth's only professional experience after college and before becoming an appointee was working on Trump's presidential campaign. So his ascent from a low-level post to deputy chief of staff is the result, the article says, in large part of staff turnover and vacancies at this department. The story of his political appointment and remarkable rise provides insight into the Trump administration's political appointments and the troubled state of the Drug Policy Office. And we've all heard about Trump. He's pledged to marshal federal government talent, according to the article here. We've seen this. He's done a lot of talking about this. He's trying to address the opioid crisis. But nearly a year after his inauguration, the Drug Policy Office, which is known as ONDCP, it lacks a permanent director. And at least seven of this department's administration's appointees have departed, and among them was a general counsel and acting chief of staff. So that's how he got promoted to this role. There was a memo that went out on January 3rd to staffers at ONDCP that shows Wyneth, the deputy chief of staff, was taking on more responsibility after the departure of the office's acting chief of staff. And I quote the memo here. It says, ONDCP leadership recognizes that we have lost a few talented staff members and that the organization would benefit from an infusion of new expert staff. So the article, the memo itself, goes in to say that the functions of the chief of staff will be picked up by me and the deputy chief of staff, who is Wyneth, who is 24 years old. And Wyneth did not respond to any request for an interview, according to the article. And after being contacted by the Post about Wyneth's qualifications and about his inconsistencies on his resumes, a Trump administration official said that Wyneth will return to the position he initially held in the agency, which was a White House liaison for ONDCP, a job that typically involves working with outside interest groups. So, interestingly enough, and thanks to the reporting of the Washington Post, we've seen some light that's being shed on this whole dynamic that seems to be going on across the administration here of lip service. But then when you start to dig down, there's not really a lot of substance to it. And according to a former Seattle police chief who ran the office during the Obama administration, he said, it sends a terrible message. It's a message that we're not taking this drug issue seriously. And in looking at the appointment here, folks, there are two resumes that YNS submitted to government that were obtained through open records request. And they shared them with the Post. And it said that when he was in high school, Wyeth was director of production for Nature's Chemistry, which was a family business in New York. And this business specialized in processing chia seeds and other health products. And his other resume indicates that he stopped working there in September of 2011. And this family company that he worked for, in the summer and fall of 2011, the firm was secretly processing illegal steroids from China as part of a conspiracy involving people from Virginia, California, and elsewhere in the United States. And one person in China, federal court records show, evidently was a part of this ring too. And according to the article, YNS' stepfather, who is Matthew Greekin, pled guilty to a felony conspiracy charge last year and received 2 years probation and a fine. And although this young man, Wyeth, was not charged in the investigation known as Operation Grasshopper, his mother, Kim, said in an interview that neither she nor her son knew about the steroid production and that he provided information to help the federal prosecutors. And I quote her here, and she says, "We didn't know anything was going on." Adding that she and Taylor were excluded by her husband from a part of the facility where the steroids were kept. It's a very humongous plant, she says. Yeah, right. Okay, well, maybe. Just maybe. But since the Washington Post shed some light on this whole issue, on what was happening to the crumbling office of the National Drug Control Policy, maybe we stand a better chance of getting it reorganized to be as effective as it should be in fighting this nationwide opioid epidemic. We need action here, Donald Trump, not just lip service. And folks, hang on. We've got another story. We'll be right back. So folks, last week, we've all seen it. We were able to triangulate the president's sheer befuddlement at the office of president last week, and we watched him crumble to an embarrassing level on Thursday, didn't we? And by triangulate the befuddlement, I'm referring to three different points here. The first one is the president's inability to grasp the concept of a FISA vote in the House over Section 702, which covers foreign surveillance. And he demonstrated his inability of grasping that concept by tweeting that this is what enabled his administration in the early days to be surveilled. And many suggest that he was watching Fox and Friends crackpot Judge Napolitano, who put the idea in his head, which caused the Twitter reaction. While the House was about to vote on this, and Chief of Staff, they were all sort of looking at each other, wondering why the president would disagree with this all of a sudden. Chief of Staff John Kelly purportedly had to run over to the president, from what we see in the press, helped our befuddled president craft another corrective tweet, which was then sent out before the vote took place. And the second point is that we saw last week is a day before this, we witnessed President Trump in a televised meeting with bipartisan senators discussing DACA, where Senator Feinstein said she wanted a clean DACA bill, which is what the president agreed to right there in the meeting. He nodded his head, okay. At which point, Senator Kevin McCarthy then delicately said to the president, that's not what we want, explaining something along the lines of the Republican stance to fund the border wall along with DACA was in the same bill. So folks, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered, Trump doesn't grasp the essential factors enough here to even intelligently debate the substance of a bill. In fact, I think Trump is highly intimidated by tenured strong senators like Dianne Feinstein that know their stuff. I think he's intimidated by senators, and especially a female senator like Dianne Feinstein. The third point here is that shows Trump's inability to lead was when he was referred famously to Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries as shithole countries. And Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, called those comments unfortunate and unhelpful. And I just want to say, what the hell? Is that the best you can do, Paul Ryan? Is that the best you can do? Unfortunate and unhelpful? Folks, the Republicans, they all protect Donald Trump. And Trump just sits back and he plays Republicans like a bunch of foolish, nodding bobbleheads. And we're being governed here, I think, by a bunch of bobblehead Republicans that are just sitting there. They nod their heads yes all day long. And it's just, it's disgusting to watch. And it's embarrassing. We need change now. So following the Trump playbook of deny, distract, denigrate, and dismiss, the very next morning after the shithole comment on Friday, Trump denied having ever said those comments. And then he distracted with this tweet, which we're going to have Elmer Fudd read for us. Elmer, take it away.
Never said anything derogatory about Haitians other than Haiti is obviously a very poor and troubled country. Never said take them out. Made up by Dems. I have a wonderful relationship with Haitians. Probably should record future meetings. Unfortunately, no trust.
Well, guess what? We've got no trust in you, Mr. President. And yes, I think you should start recording those future meetings, and I think you probably should wear a wire and record everything that you'd say throughout the day. We'd love to hear it. And why the lies? You know, why the games? And we're all really getting tired of the stupid games that he plays and the chaos that he seems to wallow in on a daily basis. We're really getting tired of it. And as the president here, he's got it all ass backward, and he's got this uncanny knack of getting under my skin, if you haven't noticed. And folks and listeners around the world, the chief attribute, in my opinion, that makes this man-child president an American is that he's basically been born here. He doesn't carry the weight of our forefathers' vision for America, and I can almost hear our forefathers screaming from heaven to vote this man out of the White House. Lock him up. I can hear our forefathers chanting right now, lock him up. They're all screaming it from the heavens in a sort of heavenly revolution. And so many people have come to the rescue of this Humpty Dumpty president, which is what always happens every time he screws up. In fact, just last Friday, after Trump's shithole comments, Rush Limbaugh said this: I just don't believe this anger is genuine, and I don't believe it's sincere, and I don't even believe it's real. I think it's contrived and made up, and it's convenient. That's what they're all excited about. Well, folks, he should be angry about what the president said, but he's not. This is an epic failure on a grand scale for people to simply recognize what is morally and ethically right or wrong. It's an epic failure that's occurring in our Republican Party right now. And you know, many evangelicals, not all of them, but many of them, still flock to this president, and every time something like this happens, they all make excuses for his behavior, and they pray to the Lord that he will give, that the Lord will give him wisdom. Well, folks, I'm praying too. And I'm praying for handcuffs or an exit, whether willingly or by impeachment. And we're going to see. We shall see if through all the prayers, if he gets wisdom before handcuffs. We shall see. The problem is, this president divides people. He lies and revels in chaos on a daily basis. His family has never shed one drop of blood in defense of our fine country, ever. Let alone picked up a rifle in its defense. And you know what? His family probably never will. That's how it works when you're Trump rich. And folks, we need a president that speaks for all the people, not just the ones he thinks voted for him. His rhetoric is a clear danger to any American that is serving our country today in countries he just called shitholes. And his rhetoric is a slam to any family or veteran that has served our country with valor in the past. Many of whom have fought and died for the ideals that we all hold that have made America great long before Trump dragged our country and our nation through this mud. This kind of rhetoric just gives people in the world a reason to distrust and hate Americans. And that's not what America has ever been about, folks. Sowing hate and distrust has never been our foreign policy in the history of our great nation. And we've tolerated his comments about women, we've heard his racist remarks about Charlottesville, and we've watched while he tried every way imaginable to tear apart health care for the poor, while giving tax cuts to the corporate and very rich. He disparages the FBI and national security agencies, calling for a purge. He has done more to worsen the growing income inequality in America to the point where people are just about ready to explode. And the whole time this is going on, Republicans have stood there, genuflecting to the president with a precious few offering any condemnation. In fact, the Republicans have become daily accomplices in the destruction of our country under Trump, and we cannot let any of them ever forget that it's we the people that hold the power in this America, and it's we the people that will end up liberating this America from what's going on today. Folks, we are the solution, not Trump or the Republicans. And we need to continue making our presence known through peaceful protest, as many are doing today already. But first and foremost, we the people can't forget that we give the power, and we can take it away. We can take that power away with our vote, just like we did in North Carolina, just like we did in Alabama. And when we work together on change, whether Democrat or Republican, we kick ass, America. We kick ass. We hold the power in this country, people. Our forefathers guaranteed that we are in control, not them, in their wounded vision for America. We don't have to take this anymore, and we won't take it anymore. This next election, my friends, they're going to see precisely what in the hell this real American democracy is all about. As the power givers, it's our American duty to liberate America from this failed presidency and restore sensibility and balance to our government. And I only hold the microphone here. But you hold the vote, America. You hold the vote. And you need to stand up and use that power our forefathers granted you 242 years ago. You need to stand, America.
Stand for the things you know are right. It's the truth that the truth makes them so alive. Stand.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to come.
Folks, I want to thank you for joining us on this podcast, and stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next week. Till then, I'm Frank Ebersold, signing off.
Ooh, man, you've been sitting much.